Hello, and welcome to Plant Powered Buddhist Podcast, where we are learning to turn our eating habits into a spiritual practice. I'm Sensei. I want to welcome you from wherever you're listening in the world. I also want to say a heartfelt thank you to all of my followers, my supporters, my clients, and my students. Without your support, I simply couldn't do what I do. I'm excited about today's episode, so with no further ado, let us begin. Today we have an interesting topic, and I hope that you will agree. And I'm going to begin by talking or mentioning a man who lived many, many years ago. In fact, at this point, perhaps over 2,000 or 2,500 years ago. And this was a Greek man, and you perhaps have heard his name. His name is Socrates. Socrates was a philosopher, a gadfly of sorts, perhaps even for those who ridiculed him, an agitator. But whatever we want to say about Socrates and what we know about Socrates is that he cared a great deal about truth. And according to his own epistemology, that is his theory of how we know, he believed, like the ancient Egyptians believed, that knowledge is innate. That is, we have the answers to every question within us. In today's time, perhaps that seems a bit odd to hold that type of thought, that I have all the answers, particularly when you have many questions. So, Socrates, though, when asked what was the role of the philosopher in society, he said that the role of the philosopher is to help people properly question themselves. Now, today we have many different types of people offering different types of services, but this is a rather unique, I would say, service to offer to humanity. That is how to properly question yourself. So a lot of you who may not feel that you have the answers that you need or want, lack those answers simply because you have not asked yourself the proper questions. That is no fault of your own. There's no blame or shame in that. In fact, to seriously self-inquire requires a level of commitment and daily practice to become effective at. And so we find that someone like Socrates and many, many others throughout history have made it a life practice to authentically question. And I myself fall within that category. That is, I've chosen to investigate and ask questions of myself and of others, but mostly of myself, for a very particular reason. And so I have used this podcast, Plant Powered Buddhist, to help share some of those questions that have opened up possibilities to me that might not have otherwise been presented to myself. And I've had plenty of opportunity to question myself and have spent a good portion of my life, shall I say, questioning, not only on a personal level, but being a speech and debate competitor and reading widely in Western philosophy, I can say that what I've extrapolated from that as a value is the ability to question and to think very critically. Now, it went to another level as I introduced into that ability what I would call Eastern traditions. That is, there is a completely different way in which the East, the traditions of the East, question, and not only how they question, but what they question. Now, knowing that, or having observed in this lifetime, I'll say, that most people are not going to take the time to learn to question, let alone question themselves. So it's kind of a double whammy, if you will. People want to know, so they say, but many don't know how to question. And those who do question, or maybe know how to question, would be more accurate, are afraid to ask themselves because they'd rather not know. Well, if you are listening to this podcast, I'm assuming that you're someone who wants to know. And my goal is to help you know. And today will be somewhat of an exercise in how to question, but for a very particular purpose. I have chosen as the questioner for my podcast to be food. And I've chosen food because it's a universal act. And anyone who has access to food will be able to experientially relate to what I say in my podcast. Maybe there are some things that will preclude you initially from fully understanding or practicing, but because you eat food, the experience of eating, there are some things that are universal about that. What is not universal is what we question in regards to our food choices. And so I want to begin with no further ado with jumping into the series of questions that I have for you as it relates to food. Let's move into the first question. How many right decisions have you made about eating food and the outcome was bad? I'll repeat. How many decisions have you made about eating where the outcome was bad? Right decision, poor or bad outcome? Think about this for a moment. And if you're in a place where you can jot it down, write it down, or maybe take a little note in your phone, please do that. I think you'll find some value to this. Last time, I'm going to ask, how many right decisions have you made about eating where the outcome was bad? So, I would say, an answer to this, whatever your answer was, what I want to share about this is that a right decision can never be bad. There can never be a bad outcome from a decision that was right. Now, I want you to notice right now, both from the question and what I just said about right decisions, what's arising in your mind, and where is it arising from? Where is this response to this question? How many right decisions have you made about eating where the outcome was bad? So you have your list of things, or maybe not. And then I say, right on the heels of that, that a right decision can never be bad. So for those of you who listed a bad outcome as a result of making a right decision about eating, I can say that your decision, depending upon the perceiver, whether it was you or someone else, the decision was not a right decision, because no right decision ever results in a bad outcome. Now, for some of you who might have answered the question, how many right decisions have you made about eating where the outcome was bad? If you responded, sometimes it was bad, or on several occasions the outcome was bad, then to you I say you made a wrong decision. Take a moment here. Don't let your ego, your pride, or the mind be clouded by a flood of emotions and thoughts. Remember, we're trying to question properly so that we can reach the best outcome. I say that a right decision can never be wrong, de facto the case. And if you say you've made a right decision and sometimes there was a bad outcome, and or many times there was a bad outcome, then I'm saying to you, it was a wrong decision. Stay with me. A right decision could never be a wrong decision. A right decision could never result in a bad outcome. Now, let's move on to the next question. How many wrong decisions have you made about food that turned out good? How many wrong decisions have you made about food resulted in a good outcome? So you'll see what's at play here just with these two initial questions. There's a lot that has to do with value judgment. And it's requiring you to develop a precise understanding, not definition. The reason why I don't go into defining words, people have asked me, Sensei, what does this mean? What does that mean? I don't like to do that, because what I find is people's minds start to get too tied up into whether they agree with a definition or not. Sometimes I have to make a definition if I feel it's a word that is not very common, not very well known, maybe part of a foreign language. If I'm talking specifically about terms from the Buddhist tradition, sometimes you would not know these terms, so it makes sense for me to define them. But I'm not going to define right or wrong. I'm going to rely on your experience as the definition. And then I'm going to challenge that definition based not on how I define a word, but based on your experience of that phenomenon called bad or good. So this second major question, how many wrong decisions have you made about food that turned out to be good? So we can kind of look at the first question and then look at this second question, and it should be apparent to you that a wrong decision cannot have a good outcome. A wrong decision cannot have a good outcome. But you may be thinking, no, you know, I made this decision about food on this occasion to do this or not to do that, and it actually turned out pretty good. We'll see about that. So, let's go a little bit deeper here. We've asked those two questions. And our overarching theme here is right decisions And of course, the fears that come with that, illegitimate fears, right decisions, illegitimate fears. So let's jump into right decisions about food. And let's see if you can agree just on these two most basic yet profound statements about right decisions as they relate to food specifically. Okay? Could you agree that a right decision about eating food would be one that promotes optimal health? That a right decision about eating food would be one that promotes optimal health. Now, again, you have to catch yourself, and this is why we're doing the questioning. This is what I call a contemplative practice, is that you must ask a question more than once. Maybe in my case, for several months, and even more profound questions for several years, depending upon one crucial factor. How attached am I to the particular phenomenon under examination? And you have to ask yourself right now, if when you hear a right decision about eating food, at a minimum means food selections that promote optimal health, and you have one atom of rejection, one atom of negative thought, of disputation. Well, I don't know, you know, what, you know, it could, what's optimal health? And like, this is what I mean. This is a mind that has run amok. This is a mind that constantly makes wrong decisions, thinking them to be right. Take it slow. That a right decision about eating food, at a minimum, is one that promotes optimal health. And for those of you who need to think in the negative, I'll state it this way. A right decision about eating food are decisions that don't promote poor health, that are not harmful to your health. Okay? Second, right decision criteria about eating food or food selection is that decision does the least amount of harm to quote unquote others. And in this category of other, I mean the environment, the planet, other beings, whatever, other than self. Because the first one is inclusive of us. So naturally, we could include ourselves in the second, but they are two separate criteria. Right decisions about food, at a minimum, we can say promotes optimal health. And secondly, is the least amount of harm, does the least amount of harm to others. That's right decision making about food. Next statement I'm going to make can be a little bit disturbing. But again, I want you to sit with this. I want you to question what's coming up. Why is that coming up when I hear this? That feels too constricting. Well, what about this situation? What about, isn't there an exception? So the next statement I'm going to make is that wrong decisions about food are all the other reasons not mentioned about right decisions. Oh, I know I just lost a lot of you by saying that, but there's still some of you who are still here, who are still not allowing pride and other lesser energies, low vibrational energies to take over your thought right now. We said that right decisions about food are decisions that promote optimal health and do the least amount of harm to others. And in that others, we said environment, planet, beings, people, etc. Now we say that the wrong decisions about food are all other decisions besides those two. Wow. That's a lot. But I can tell you, and for those of you who have read my book, Eat Like a Buddha, that all other decisions, which are wrong decisions about food, are based upon the four horsemen. And I'm not going to go into detail about what the four horsemen are here, but I'll just mention culture, tradition, habit, and taste buds. Anything that you have added in addition to promoting optimal health and doing the least harm to others is an iteration, an offshoot of one of those four horsemen. I guarantee you, if you sit with it, you'll know that the root is one or all of those four. Notice I didn't say anything about taste. Well, what did I just say? That's one of the four horsemen. Right decision about eating food has to do with taste. No correlation whatsoever. None whatsoever. Right decisions. Now, it may be consistent that you make a decision about food selection that promotes optimal health and that does the least amount of harm, but you don't like the taste of it. But it could also be the opposite, that you can make the right decisions about food and you like the taste of it. But here's what's important. What changes? Your value of that criterion is not the criterion itself, but you and your mind. I like the taste of this. What's wrong with eating this? See where the taste buds take you? When you don't have a way to question the taste buds. So is everything that tastes good, good for me? Not necessarily, because people have different taste buds. Someone might like something that tastes horrible to another person. It doesn't mean that it's good for that person who likes it and bad for the person who doesn't, because we have our strong criterion here. Promotes optimal health and does the least amount of harm to others. All other reasons are wrong reasons. And again, in today's society, people really get into this, oh, who's to say what's right and what's wrong? Let's not play that. I don't do that on this podcast. This podcast is for really, honestly, seriously minded individuals who are trying to grow, who are trying to develop, who are expanding and deepening their consciousness, trying to understand how it is that they make decisions about something that they do every day and the impact of that. That's what this is about. Not argumentation. As I said, I'm a former speech and debate competitor. I love to debate. I love that. I used to love that stuff, and it means not much to me anymore. I only employ it when necessary. But on my podcast, it's not the place. It's not me trying to convince you that I am right and you are wrong. No, I am here simply to help facilitate a deeper understanding based upon considerations that you may have never made before. Or if you have, which we're going to move to next, you abandon them because of one crucial thing. And that I call social capital. Maybe you've had some inkling that perhaps your food choices aren't optimal for your health and that they are doing more harm than they ought to others or to the other. Environment, animals, people, the planet. But there is something else that you value more, even though you may say on your lips that it is not true, and that is that you value social capital over right decisions as it regards food. And if that is your state, again, not a bad thing, but it is a heck of a realization. Now, this is something that you can actually work on, that you can actually cultivate to change. People are always talking about, oh, my practice is this and that and this other thing. And really, it's a lot of smokescreen. It's just one big smokescreen. Because here's something tangible, and you can feel the tension of it as you sit with this, that if I were to make decisions about eating based upon right decisions, that is those decisions that promote optimal health and do the least amount of harm, then a whole list of other questions come up that cause the illegitimate fears to arise. Questions such as, well, who would I eat food with? Social capital question. Well, I still like to get invited to the, you know, the cool dinner parties and the lunches and the backyard barbecues or whatever. And what if I'm not invited to those? All illegitimate fears based upon social capital and the fear of the loss of that. What you should ask yourself now, as we are deepening our questioning, is why is it that I have few to none, no people in my inner circle, family, friends, colleagues, who are making right decisions about food? And that I, in turn, likewise, am not making right decisions about food because I want to be accepted by those who are making wrong decisions about food. Did you follow that? Where are the people in your life that are making right decisions about food? If there are any, why is the number so small? And why aren't you one of those people? Taste buds, habit, tradition, and culture. Those are the four horsemen. And I would add to that addiction. Again, and the word that is in most people's mind very negative. I don't have a negative view of that word. In fact, I had to say to myself, I'm addicted to the food that I eat at that time when I was not making right decisions about eating. And unlike many people, I didn't make excuses. I was like, you know, I hear the truth and it's the truth. And I said this to other people and to myself, I'm just too weak to do it. But, and there was always a but I am going to change. And I began my journey, my practice, my actually making better decisions. And ultimately, those better decisions led to right decisions. And you have that opportunity today. You have that opportunity to dismiss these illegitimate fears that arise based upon social capital that isn't even worth the investment. Because what you're sacrificing indeed in action in your habit is your health and the health of others. How so? Because you're making wrong decisions about food. And in your decision is impacting others. And some of those people, presumably you love, family members, friends, your kids. And you say, oh, you know, my, You can't have a kid growing up not eating fill in the blank. That just wouldn't be right. I hear that so often. I've seen people inside of malls and coming out of, you know, coffee shops, and their kid is 4 or 5 years old and has a, you know, 1200 calorie Junko Drinko in their hand. And they just think, do you like it? Do you like the whipped cream? And it's like, are you serious right now? But, you know, people are very sensitive about their kids, but they're drinking it too. So do you see what I'm saying? Do you see the social capital? Well, everyone else is, all the other parents buy their kids this. I don't want our kids not to have that. And if you don't have kids, you're a college student, high school student, an executive. It doesn't matter what your status is. What matters is, do you have right decision making? And if you know what right decision making is and you're not making that decision, in fact, you're making wrong decisions, what we're trying to do with the questioning today is make explicit why those questions are not being asked. And they are based upon these, what I call, illegitimate fears. And the catalyst is social capital. Some perceived benefit. I don't want to be ostracized. I don't want to be on the outside. So I, as the questioner now, ask you, what kind of friend are you? That you would make decisions. It's one thing to make decisions that are bad for yourself, which I don't want you to do, but you make decisions that encourage other people every day to make wrong decisions about food. I know it stings. I know it stings. But this is what I had to tell myself to wake myself up. That no matter how healthy I was, and I'm doing martial arts and I can run this far, and, you know, look, the doctor says that I'm that, nonsense. All of that was a smokescreen to encourage me to continue in something that was not right decision making. It was decision making that made me feel good, that was socially acceptable. Not only socially acceptable, I'm going to go stronger and say that wrong decisions about food are not just socially acceptable, they are encouraged. And they are encouraged by your own decision-making and behavior. And every day, if you doubt what I'm saying, every day, I want you to think, am I making the right decision right now? And you're making assumptions that by making right decisions about food, that it won't be tasty, that you won't get an enjoyment out of it. How about making right decisions that result in food that you also love the taste? It's not a hypothetical. Many of us are doing it every single day, but we have to get to this deep level of questioning. So I'm going to stop here. You have the questions. Now it's just a matter of whether or not you will allow these illegitimate fears about making right decisions in life override what you know is the best thing to do. That's really what it comes down to. It's not about waiting for someone else to tell you what kind of diet to do, this, that, and the other. No. Are you making right decisions about food? Or are you making wrong decisions? And for the vast majority of people, unfortunately, they're making wrong decisions that are encouraged by society, by their family, by their friends, and you are participating in it in the same way. Every time someone sees you make a wrong decision about eating, you are implicitly, if not explicitly, saying, yeah, you should do this too. In fact, let's do this together. This must change if, in fact, you are really interested in rising above the kind of rote, animalistic, knee-jerk reaction to life. Those are the souls that I'm speaking to. give it some thought, then make a change. Right decisions are always right, and wrong decisions are always wrong. Start making the right decision today. And that concludes this episode of Plant Powered Buddhist Podcast. I want to thank you again for joining me today. I also want to quickly mention several ways in which you can support my work. One, wherever you're listening to this podcast or this episode right now, if there's the ability to leave a review or a 5-star rating, I would definitely appreciate that. Secondly, if you'd like to learn more about my background, my books, the services that I offer, where my social media sites are, or you'd like to invite me to speak publicly, please visit plantpoweredbuddhist.com. You can do all of that there. Third, if you have a family member, a friend, or a colleague who you think would benefit from my content, please share this episode or my podcast with that person or those people. Lastly, in this episode that you just listened to, there is a clickable link. And if it's not clickable, you can cut and paste it into your browser. That will take you to a page where you can begin to support my work monetarily on a monthly basis for as little as $1 a month. If you could find it in your heart to do any of those things, I would deeply appreciate it. Until next time, peace and blessings.